Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I talked about Beethoven with Philadelphia Orchestra conductor-in-residence Christian Macellaru. He had just finished leading Beethoven's Second Symphony.
Actually, for me, Beethoven's Second Symphony, in a way, it takes one step back in Beethoven's progression of his development for his music. And it's a little bit closer to Haydn than the First Symphony, because the First Symphony had such a strong statement to make. And it actually starts with great dissonance, the symphony, in a way that no other symphony before had done. And within it, Beethoven wanted to depart more and more from his contemporaries, but in a way the Second Symphony comes back to where his contemporaries were as well, but at the same time we still see Beethoven in all his glory, in his youthful glory. It's interesting because any of the movements could be interchanged with one of Haydn's symphonies. The one that comes to mind is, one of the London symphonies, the one in D major. And the way that I conceived of the piece is to have the Haydn-esque crispiness and lightness, but at the same time to have Beethoven's strong-footed jokes. And you know, it's sort of the difference between him and Haydn. It's a car that is automatic and one that is with a stick shift. And I think Beethoven is with a stick shift where every turn is just a bit more radical or a bit more sudden than in Haydn, where even the most cute joke, it's still incredibly elegant and eloquent.
So when you talk about the jokes, are you talking about the third movement?
I'm talking about the third movement. I'm talking about some things that even in the second movement, actually, where he chooses to build an anticipation that then it's never delivered until a final moment. And then even when it is delivered, it's delivered with not so much a sense of arrival, but with the sense of being pushed into the delivery, you know, so using a sforzato or using an accent that in a way gives you the delivery a lot more than what you even expected at that point. So he uses these devices to, I think, was trying to be charming and cheeky, but as we know, Beethoven, there was, I hate to say this, but there was nothing really elegant about him. I mean, he is so real and human and a composer of the people, really, at the time, that I think he speaks of who we are in reality rather than a higher echelon of a bourgeois social class. This is what I love about Beethoven, because even the jokes that he makes are somewhat more crass. They're more of the people. It's not high stylistically elegant.
What do you make of the fact that he wrote this kind of uplifting, happy symphony in the midst of personal crisis? He was discovering that he was going deaf.
I think Beethoven always, for me, in all of his symphonies, in all of his music, and of course later on more and more, but Beethoven speaks to one thing that I think is so important and crucial in discovering what classical music can do for you, and that is finding a personal source of happiness and a personal source of inner peace, which for him, it came from music. And for Beethoven, which is why I think he loved nature so much as well, is because you find yourself a pawn in a much, much grander picture that then you can actually be elated by the beauty of the picture. Rather than, if the picture is all about who you are as a person, many things become actually oppressive about who we are as human beings. But if you look at it in a much, much grander scope, even the tribulations of one person can actually fit in a picture that it is still beautiful. And I think this is what Beethoven's music ends up doing for me. And I hope it does for humanity in general. The fact that it teaches us to look inwards to be able to see the grander picture of what the humanity as a whole is, and how, in a way, even in our deepest struggles, we still contribute to a beautiful picture that humanity is.
It's interesting you say that, because the last time we spoke, we talked about music as being a mirror to allow yourself to look inside yourself. And I was thinking of that as I was listening, because I thought I felt something resonate within me, but I also felt that it was a very personal statement from Beethoven.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, music, I think of music as being a true equalizer, because it doesn't matter who you are and what status you have in society, social, economic, it doesn't matter. Music speaks to everyone in the same way, because it is a true mirror that forces you to look at yourself. So it's such a beautiful thing to have a diverse audience that sits and listens to classical music together. I think it's just as important to have the communion of having everybody in the concert hall share the same experience, yet personal, each one in their own mirror, so to speak. But it's so important that the aspect of the gesture that we make as a society to come together in a place where we are all introspectively having this communion with 2,000 other people of completely different backgrounds and a completely different diverse statuses, if that's even a word, in society. And then we all find that same truth and that same equalizer, which is the music itself. And I think art will forever live because it defines who we can be as humans. It's not so much defining about what we've been, but I think it defines who we can be. Yes, it's beautiful to look and to see people like Beethoven that have achieved some of the most incredible things that humans have been able to achieve. But it's more important to look at Beethoven's music as teaching us who we can be rather than just what we've achieved.
I was enjoying what seemed like a really wonderful musical conversation between the different sections in the orchestra. And I don't know if that was any particular technique of his, but it kind of drew me into the conversation.
This is definitely a technique that Beethoven developed a lot and went a lot further than Haydn. Haydn was great about having these conversations, but at some point Haydn's conversations become predictable. And I don't mean that as a bad thing. They become predictable because he wants them to be predictable in order to be able to play jokes on people when they're not. So it's very well thought out. But if you take a step back and you look at Schubert's music, for example, who was at some point a contemporary of Beethoven's, Schubert's conversations are a lot more simple in the sense that the polyphonic writing of the orchestra, the conversation back and forth between different instruments, is not quite as intense or as well developed. And the reason why, I think it has to do with the fact that Beethoven, while being an incredible improviser himself, and people talked about his improvisatory skills as, you know, compared to Bach before and to people like that, when it came to writing orchestral music, Beethoven actually struggled a lot in the craftsmanship. And the struggle was not because he wasn't able to. The struggle was because he wanted to break away from just improvising something and putting down on paper what was in his head. So I love the fact that there's this one aspect of his style that I really love. There are these notebooks that he used to converse to be able to have a conversation with people, where people will write questions for him and so he can answer. And then, you know, on some of the pages you see things where he would practice his compositions, and there are entire notebooks of Beethoven where he just wrote scales. Up and down, up and down, just scales. And why would someone of that incredible musicianship need to write scales? And I think it was his way of practicing and being able to have everything visually available to him. To him, building a symphony was less about taking away the things that needed to be taken away and more about taking every single building block and putting it together. So, you know, sometimes I think it was Michelangelo, if I'm not mistaken, that said that for them, creating a sculpture was taking away things that didn't belong there until the truth was revealed. I think of Mozart in that way, you know, rather than Beethoven, which was the opposite. Beethoven built everything from every single stone, and it was an intellectual build-up. It's fascinating to look at the things that he took out of the symphonies after the symphony was finished, you know, to see how he recreated the build-up and took this stone and replaced it with something else. And it's incredible, which is why I think the conversation is more interesting, because he was conscious in making sure that orchestration was starting to become an art form in itself. In Mozart's time, before Beethoven, and even in Haydn, but even in Schubert later on, orchestration was not so much understood as an art form as just a means to an end, the musicianship. Beethoven started looking at an orchestra as a playful instrument, actually, and as an art form that then, you know, in Ravel and Debussy and Stravinsky became the climax of this art form, which is orchestration.
Thank you so much, Christian Macellaru.
My pleasure.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.